Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm out here 1,000 miles from my home. Walking a road other men have gone down.
Can you imagine yourself such a big fan of a musician that you not only buy their music, but spend hundreds of hours parsing their lyrics, purchasing their personal effects, even sifting through their garbage? If you went to those lengths, what does it say about that musician? And more importantly, what does it say about you? Well, maybe the least extreme point on this spectrum of super fandom is simply traveling thousands of miles to see your favorite singer. And that's exactly the reality for thousands of fans who gather every year right around this time in the Minnesota town of Hibbing to celebrate the birthday of Bob Dylan, who was born there later this week in 1941. A new book profiles these most loyal fans and sometimes how their fandom can go just a little bit overboard. David Kinney is the author of the book. It's called The Dylanologist's Adventures in the Land of Bob, and he joins me now. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, you're headed later this week to Hibbing. Is that right? Can we start in that northern Minnesota town? It's where you start in the book.
Sure. You know, Hibbing is Dylan's hometown. It looks pretty much like it did when he was growing up there. I mean, there's a Walmart out in the perimeter, but the downtown looks just exactly like it was. And that's one of the things that draws people back, that and this sort of celebration that Hibbing puts on every year. So there's a singer-songwriter competition where people sing their own stuff, and they also sing Dylan covers. There's a bus tour that will take you around all of the sights of Dylan's young life. So you can see his house. You can see the place where he had his bar mitzvah. You can see the train track where he nearly got run down on a motorcycle as a teenager. And so all of these people sort of go back there and soak up the vibe. I mean, Dylan's not there anymore, obviously. His relatives are mostly gone. But you can still sort of soak up that North Country air, and it really does color how you listen to, especially those early records.
All right. Now, a pilgrimage to a musician's hometown isn't all that uncommon. And certainly Hollywood tours of famous homes and people's famous driveways, not all that uncommon either, for better or for worse. But
even Dylan has done it.
Even Dylan himself has done it.
Yeah, Dylan has gone to John Lennon's house. He's
great.
Gone to Neil Young's house. He's gone to Sun Studio and kiss the spot where Elvis recorded That's All Right, Mama.
Right. Dylan kind of gets it now. But as I sort of said before we introduced you, that's kind of the most understandable aspect of being a super fan. But I want you to introduce us to a couple of the characters in your book who sort of take it the other way. Who is Bill Pagel or Bill Pagel?
Bill Pagel. Now, Bill is a pharmacist who lived in the Midwest, followed Dylan for years. For a while, he drove around trying to collect information about old shows, and he became this sort of collector of music and video and documents and photographs and that sort of thing. But about 20 years ago, it took sort of a different turn. He was in Hibbing for this celebration of the town's history and had an opportunity to buy Bob Dylan's high chair. And I remember when I talked to him about this, I said, did you have any reluctance? Did you feel like this was sort of crossing some sort of weirdness Rubicon? And for him, it didn't. He was a collector, and he wanted it, and he bought the thing. Now, he didn't display it. He didn't use it. He put it in his house and with all of his other artifacts. Bill has also bought the house in Duluth where the Zimmermans first lived when Dylan was an infant, so where Dylan sat in that high chair. So he owns that house, and he's fixed it up and restored it. And, you know, what will become of these things? Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he collects it because it's sort of in his code. But, you know, people hope that at some point there'll be a Dylan museum or there'll be a Dylan childhood home.
Now, there's another character in your book, Jules Weberman, and Jules has spent thousands of hours kind of poring over the lyrics of Bob Dylan, parsing them for hidden meanings, almost like a Kabbalistic kind of transcendental interpretation of the lyrics. And it sort of brought my mind back to this 60 Minutes interview with Ed Bradley in 2004, where Dylan himself kind of talked about people who look for meaning in his lyrics. Listen.
My stuff were songs, you know, they weren't sermons. If you examine the songs, I don't believe you're going to find anything in there that says that I'm a spokesman for anybody or anything, really.
But they saw it.
Yeah, but that's no, but they must not have heard the songs.
That's kind of a light way of Bob Dylan expressing a feeling that you say he had, which is he has contempt for a lot of people who say they're his fans.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, you know, A.J. Weberman is a legendary fan. I mean, he went through Dylan's garbage cans in the late 60s looking for sort of a Rosetta Stone that would help explain, that would help sort of decode Dylan's lyrics. And so from then on, he gave people who engage in this sort of work a bad name. I mean, there are ways to look at Dylan's lyrics and try and figure out what's going on there, whether it's, you know, where he's borrowing things from, what he's alluding to, how he's drawing from the blues, how he's drawing from folk tradition, how he's drawing from, you know, the literary canon. And those are all legitimate ways of looking at the songs and trying to dig deeper into them. And that's what a lot of the people who I spent time with, that's what they do. That's what they're interested in. They want to take it to the next level. And I think Dylan's objection from the very beginning has been there's this over-analysis that the songs are the songs. You're supposed to feel them. They shouldn't necessarily be the subject of university courses. And there's some legitimacy to that. I mean, I think there's sort of a disconnect between an artist and an audience anyway, mm-hmm. because they create this stuff and they don't necessarily know how they do it. They just do it. And, you know, we who appreciate it don't, you know, we can't wrap our heads around it if we don't do it ourselves.
Well, let me spend
all this time trying to figure it out.
Let me stop you there, David Kinney, because I want to get one thing out of you. You know, your book inspired us to ask listeners what they would say or do with their favorite musician if they had 5 minutes with them. And it makes me have to ask you, if you had 5 minutes with Dylan, I don't even know if you're a big fan of his or just a big fan of his cult, but if you had your 5 minutes with Dylan, how would it go?
I am a huge fan of his, of course. You know, I mean, far be it from me to tell Bob Dylan anything. I mean, Dylan has made a career of taking no one's advice, and he's been pretty successful about it. You know, the one thing that I would say is, you know, keep making music and keep writing books and keep painting paintings and doing all the other stuff that you do, because, you know, the great thing about Dylan is that he's been doing it for 50 years. He does something different from at different points in his career, and while it may not always be great, it's always interesting. And so, you know, I hope he keeps doing it forever.
David Kinney is author of The Dylanologist, Adventures in the Land of Bob. David, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Early one morning, the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red.
So, if you could get your 5 minutes alone with your all-time favorite band or musician, who would it be and what would you tell them?
Hi, this is Jason from South Carolina. I was calling to say that my favorite musician is Ryan Adams, and if I had 5 minutes with him, I would just tell him that his music got me through the deepest and darkest times and just give him a simple thank you.
We got this from Charlotte, North Carolina. Oh, that's easy. The band would be Rush. I would try to find a way to explain how since 1978 they've become part of my very being. Sounds corny, doesn't it? Well, it doesn't sound corny to us. That's exactly what we want to hear. Give us your take at 8778MYTAKE. You can tweet us at The Takeaway. And as always, you can catch up with us on thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry. He'll be back tomorrow. This is The Takeaway.
We drove that car as far as we could, abandoned it out west. Split up on the docks at night, but the green it was best. She turned around to look at me.